If you have your Bibles with you, let me invite you to open them to Genesis 29. We're going to be moving through that section 29 and 30 and 31 this morning in a rather summary way during the sermon, but in a detailed way in our Bible classes. Let me invite you, if you have not normally been part of our classes, to try them out. I think you'll find that what you take home with you with our time here in the sermon, plus the time in the class, will bless you much more, and your insight and understanding will be much greater as a consequence of staying for class. This morning we're going to talk about God's boot camp, God's discipline, God's training, and we often think in our minds of experiences that we may have had in our youth at the hands of a coach, because it's usually a coach that has imparted discipline in our lives, and we think of those times in our life when we went through some sort of a boot camp. Those of you that have been in the military will think of your drill sergeant as that coach who put you through the steps. I think of someone like Jeff Klein when I think of a good coach, someone who can motivate and encourage the football players. But coaching today has moved beyond just the realm of sports. There are those who in their careers employ a career coach to talk with them about their goals and help them set goals and help them remove obstacles from achieving those goals. There are those today who will hire a personal coach to help them with just life issues and, again, to help them move forward toward their goals. A good coach provides invaluable insight to those being trained because of his or her ability to spot weaknesses in the trainee and to then help them overcome those weaknesses to arrive at their full potential. Can you imagine what it would be like if we could have a daily one-on-one with God as our coach? If every morning you could get up and over a cup of coffee could sit down and could evaluate the past 24 hours in your life and allow God to lay out a plan for the coming day and the coming week and the coming months, and if it was tailor-made by His knowing your weaknesses and developing a strategy to overcome those weaknesses and to build upon your strengths, can you imagine what kind of people we would be if we had that kind of daily time with God? For those of you that have been there, you already know this. The United States Army is always looking for a few good men and women, and they will put you through boot camp, and in 10 weeks, they will make a soldier out of you. Week one is fall in. Week two is direction. Week three is endurance. Week four is marksmanship. Week five is trials. Week six is camaraderie. Week seven is confidence. Week eight is combat skill development. Week nine is victory forge. And week 10 is graduation. Now, I'll tell you, God doesn't work that fast. His boot camp lasts as long as you do. It is a lifelong training exercise, and the day you breathe your last is the day that you graduate from God's boot camp. This morning, I want us to look at Jacob as an illustration of God's loving discipline and training over a lifetime, because what you see with Jacob is what you get yourself. Now, Jacob had been a spoiled mama's boy. He had been at home. He had his mother looking after him and his interests, even to his own detriment. She had taught him the fine art of lying, of deceiving. And she had taught Jacob to deceive his own father, to cheat his own brother. He took the blessing. He earlier had taken advantage of his brother with the birthright. And now, because of this deception and this lying, this cheating, His life is going to be threatened by his own brother Esau. And so he leaves home, again, under the guise of going to find a wife back in Haran. And so he goes, and in Genesis chapter 29, we read about that 500-mile journey, about Jacob pausing along the way, thinking he's far from home and far from God, and realizing that night as he lay and he dreams and he sees the angels ascending and descending on the stairway to heaven. God tells him he's right there with him, and Jacob says, I thought I was away from God, but now I know God is in this place. And so he called it Bethel, and there he built a memorial to God. He travels on that 500 miles. He arrives exhausted in a new land that he's never seen before. And one of the very first people he meets is the girl he's going to marry. There comes Rachel with her flocks. He helps her water the flocks. He goes in. He meets the man who is his uncle, the man who will be his future father-in-law. And there, Jacob's boot camp begins in that far land. And you know the first thing that God used with Jacob to break him in that period of basic training? He used the ones who would be his family. God often uses those closest to us to accomplish his purposes in our life in his training program to hone us and sharpen us, and sometimes he has to break us. Did you know that some of the greatest lessons in life are learned within the context of your own family? Lessons like patience and forgiveness and faithfulness. God gave Jacob a father-in-law that could outlie and outcheat and outscoundrel the worst guy in the neighborhood. He promised Jacob that he would give his daughter Rachel to him after 7 years of work. And then on his wedding night, he switched the gift. He gave him not Rachel, the one Jacob loved, but Rachel's older sister that he was going to have a hard time pawning off on anyone. And Jacob then agreed to work 7 more years for the one that he wanted in the first place. After he had finished those 14 years of indentured servitude, Laban somehow smooth-talked him, tricked him into staying another 6 years by promising him more and paying him less. Jacob would later on talk about his mistreatment over 20 years at the hands of that conniving father-in-law. In chapter 31, verse 6, he was talking to Rachel, and he says, "You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. Jacob was a liar. Jacob was a cheat. But he met a match in his father-in-law, Laban. Over those 20 years, he was forced to swallow dose after dose of his very own medicine. And he learned through this discipline. He learned what it felt like to be the one who was cheated. He learned for the first time what it was like to be the one who was lied to and the one who was wronged. And perhaps he understood for the very first time in his life what he had really done to his old father, Isaac, and lying to him the way he did. Perhaps he learned for the very first time what Esau really felt like when he was wronged, not once but twice, by his brother. And in the process, something amazing happened in Jacob's life. He grew. Over 20 years of dealing with his primary sin, his primary struggle, that of lying and deception, Jacob began to grow and to move beyond those struggles in his life. So, don't complain about your in-laws. God might just have given you the ones He gave you to teach you a lesson and help you grow. Now, God taught Jacob another very important lesson that all of us must learn in life, and that is, He taught Jacob the true source of his blessings. Jacob had been favored. He almost had developed an entitlement attitude because everything seemed to go his way. He tricked Esau out of his birthright just on the spur of the moment. Well, how clever was that? With the help of his mother, he had deceived his old blind father and he had stolen the blessing. And then he goes to this new land. He goes there without anything, and suddenly he begins to prosper because God was the one behind the scenes causing that to happen. But Jacob, I think at first, believed it was all due to him. He thought he was that smart that he could do all that. After all, he had outsmarted his brother and his father, and he had gone after the woman he loved. He eventually had got her. He had set about building his fortune. And it can become easy in life, if things go well for us, to believe that we are self-made men or self-made women. After all, I worked hard. I earned it. I got my degree. All these things are due me because of my own ingenuity and my own labor. And we can come to believe that we are the master of our own ship. Well, there's a section in here that is bizarre, to say the least. You'll have a chance to discuss it in your class. It's in chapter 30. Jacob works for a period of time for his father-in-law, Laban. All he's doing is enriching his father-in-law. And so he says to his father-in-law, I need to begin building something for my own family. And Laban asks him, well, what do you want me to pay you? How do you want to work this arrangement out? And so Jacob comes up with this really bizarre arrangement. He says, the sheep and the goats, he says, let me have all the offspring that are either speckled or spotted or are off color. Now, this always constitutes the minority segment of any flock of sheep or goats. And Jacob was in essence saying, let me sort of have these goats and sheep that are not purebred looking. And Laban was very ready to agree to that. He said, sure. He said, you can have all the speckled and the spotted and the off-colored animals. And so Jacob then learns a secret way to increase those seemingly defective members of the flock. Now, you can read commentaries. And some commentators try to support what Jacob did and said, well, there's actually a biological way that this could happen. By far, the majority of the commentators say that wouldn't work anywhere, anytime, what Jacob did. Jacob went out and he took branches off several kinds of trees and he would cut a strip of the bark and peel it off the tree. And turn it a little bit and peel another strip off. So he had a branch that looked like a striped branch. And he took these different branches that had been stripped of the bark in a variety of places, and he took them to the water trough. And during the mating season, he placed these striped branches in the water trough so that when the sheep and the goats came to drink, they would have that striped stick right before their eyes. And by looking at that striped stick as they were in the mating season, that funny-looking branch would cause them to then bear funny-looking babies, striped and spotted and off-colored babies. Now, you can talk about this in class, and you can debate it. I guess every animal scientist knows that this is how you do that. I don't know. Read it. Read the text with me. Look in chapter 30, down in verse 37. Jacob, however, took fresh-cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees and made white stripes on them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all the watering troughs, so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. When the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches, and they bore young that were streaked or speckled or spotted. And so Jacob sets these apart, and his herd begins to grow. And lo and behold, There are more spotted and streaked and miscolored animals than there are the other. And so what Laban thought was going to be a quick way to increasing his herd turned out to be a quick way to increasing Jacob's flock of animals. Now, Jacob had not learned the truth that was written in Deuteronomy later, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 16. You may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you the strength to acquire wealth. I think it was a bunch of superstitious mumbo-jumbo. That's been my conclusion. I think Jacob thought he had developed this secret means, and we know he's living in a foreign land. We know his father-in-law has false gods in his own household, and I think a lot of that culture was rubbing off on Jacob, and Jacob thought he could outdo his father through this mysterious form of superstition. God was the one who blessed him. God was the one who increased his herds. God was the one who would eventually make him into a very wealthy man. In Proverbs 10:22, the wise man says, the blessing of the Lord brings wealth. Remember that commercial a few years ago for a Volkswagen Passat, and that little boy was dressed up like Darth Vader in his costume, and he was going around the house trying to make things turn on magically, and nothing worked, and his dad pulls in the driveway, and he stands out there in front of the car, and he's trying to make the car do something, and the dad sees through the kitchen window, and so he pushes the remote, and the car starts, and the lights come on, and the little boy is just amazed at his power. It finally worked. And here Jacob is with all his mumbo-jumbo and his sticks out there, and he's just amazed that his flock is increasing. And it's God who's got the remote control, and God who's doing the blessing, and God who should have been getting the credit. How many go through life believing that it is through my own power and ingenuity that my course has been charted, and I have forged and made my own fortune in life, when all the time, behind the scenes, it is God who's doing the blessing? At the end of Jacob's life, he travels to Egypt, and he finally sees his son Joseph again. You remember the story. And he blesses all of his sons, and Joseph brings his boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, to the knees of old Jacob. And Jacob places his hands on those boys to offer his blessing. And here at the end of his life, Jacob acknowledges the one who's really been responsible for it all. In Genesis 48:15, as he blesses those boys, he says, may the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked faithfully, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has delivered me from all harm, may He bless these boys. You know, sometimes we don't learn until very late in life the most important lessons of all. God would put Jacob through all kinds of trials and difficulties. And now in his old age, he blesses God and recognizes the one from whom all blessings come. There's a third lesson, and the lesson is yours. God brought Jacob back home after all that had happened to clean up the mess that he left at the beginning. Look in Genesis chapter 31, down in verse 13. God spoke to Jacob in a dream, and he says there in 31:13, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar. That's where he spent the night and used the rock as a pillow and saw the angels ascending and descending on the stairs. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. I wonder if Jacob said, God, do you know what you're asking me to do? Do you not remember what I did to my father and to my brother? Do you not remember the vow that Esau had to take my life? And you want me to go back into that hornet's nest again? It had been 20 years, but I tell you folks, 20 years is not long enough for some things to cool off. Jacob would do what God asked. And he would go back. And he would send ahead of him, we're going to see next week, he would send ahead of him wave after wave of rich gifts to try to dampen whatever anger remained in his brother's heart. He would be frightened to death of that encounter with Esau. And he would learn the lesson that all must learn as we go through God's boot camp, and that is this: whatever your past is, you can't run from it. And you can't bury it. You can't hide from it. In the long run, every one of us must face our past. Whatever messes we've made, we must own up to those things and work through those things, either in this life or in the next. None of us can just forget about it. God taught Jacob that life's messes must be dealt with. You know, there was a lot that Jacob would never be able to make right. He couldn't undo the theft of that blessing. He couldn't undo the pain that he had caused his father in that deception that day. He tried to make it up with generous gifts to Esau. And he would eventually humble himself before his brother and his father. Many other lessons would have to be learned by Jacob over the course of his life. He would be molded through pain and through sorrow, the loss of Joseph and all those years of not even knowing what had happened to his son. Right up until the very end of his life, at old age, he would still be going through trials and difficulties. He went through the famine. He lost much of his resources. But look at the diamond that God finally produced from that lump of coal that he started with that lying cheat of a man named Jacob. God transformed him through a lifelong series of trials and challenges and trainings. And God will do the very same for any of us. He will put you through a lifelong boot camp in order to make you holy, in order to make you fit to be in His presence. Most of all, what God offers to us, He's already done. He has offered the cleansing and the forgiveness that only can happen through His Son. And then He begins that process that we read of in Scripture of regeneration and transformation that allows us to be transformed into the very likeness of Jesus Christ. But you know, to begin that process, in God's boot camp, you've got to enlist. You have to show up for basic training. You've got to continue going back for His instruction and for the trials. You can't go AWOL. But if you submit to Him, He will transform anyone, just like He did Jacob. So this morning we're going to sing a song. And if you need the transformation that God alone can offer in that initial cleansing, the transformation that continues throughout your entire life until your dying day, God is ready to put you into training. And the results are little short of miraculous. If you need to come this morning, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.